Welcome to Rounding the Bases with Joel Goldberg. I'm Joel Goldberg. My guest on this episode says on his Twitter feed, in pursuit of having my mind blown, which means he's probably quite the entrepreneur and innovator. And that's exactly the case for Blake Miller.
You start to look at like just nodes on a network. Buildings are really just a node on the network in a city. They're microcosms of what that general whole city is. And so we make them more efficient, better. We can make a city smart from the inside out.
More with Blake in just a moment. And I don't know what the future will look like in terms of dry cleaning, but in the present, I know that I need hangers all the time. They take care of those salvy splashes. They make everything much better with my suits. Get it all out clean and perfect. And you can find them throughout the Kansas City area, including a number of grocery stores. So check out Hangers, hangerskc.com, Kansas City's hometown eco-friendly dry cleaner. On to the interview. And my goal with each episode is to have different types of guests each time. So whether it be the entrepreneur who owns a restaurant, or the mayor of Kansas City. I want to hear their stories, tell their stories. And this week, someone different. When I hear about smart cities and technology that's making cities better, it's a little bit over my head, I'll be honest. But that's the world that Blake Miller lives in. Fascinating the work that he is doing. So without further ado, here is my latest guest, Blake Miller. So Blake, I'm excited to have you on because you're doing things, at least in my world, in my mind, that I almost feel like it's like the Jetsons or something like that. I mean, it's the future is happening right now in the present. And of course, in this world of technology, there's new stuff coming out
every day,
every single day. But what you're doing can affect a full community, can affect a full city. So give me, to start, sort of the short Cliff's Notes version of what your still very young company is doing.
Sure. So our company is called Homebase. We call ourselves a connected building and community management platform for multifamily and student housing, which is a total mouthful. It basically means smart homes for apartments. But when you look at that, when you look at kind of everything that's in the smart home, the smart locks, the thermostats, the lighting, there's just so much more that goes into an apartment and all these people that are clustered together, as well as, you know, all the different users that go into a building itself. So we've looked at how do you make tools that not only give people the control of their smart home, the lock, the thermostat, whatever it might be, but also gives them access to their apartment building. The apartment building itself has better energy management, all these other people that are going through, but also really drives a lot of communication. Communication, I think, is breaking down. Even though we're all communicating more and more every day, it's a lot more fragmented. So we want to really focus on how to kind of pull all these things together and not only give tools to manage a building more efficiently and make it more affordable and all of those things, but also drive better community.
Because when I heard about your company and I read a little bit and people were saying, hey, you got to meet Blake. And I said, okay, so this sounds like, you know, the type of thing I'll sign up for in my home where I can control the alarm and the air conditioning and all that and the lights from while I'm out of town or at work. Which, of course, that's all a small part of it, but yet there's so much more, right? And so, one, what else can you do with it? Two, let's talk a little bit about how that affects the greater good.
Sure. So, you know, to start with the first part of your question, where does it go from here? Where are we skating to where the puck is going to go, right?
So, good hockey reference, by the way, and I'm a hockey guy, so
there it is.
That.
Have to. It's one of my other partners' favorite lines. But it is very true, right? So if you look at multifamily or some of these things over the last few years and, you know, all these luxury high-end apartments, everybody's got granite countertops, everybody got stainless steel and the amenity war of a cooler gym and a bigger pool and all these other things, it's table stakes now. Like even affordable housing has granite countertops and some stainless steel. It's expected and nice. And we very much think that, like, in the future, and I think that future is going to happen very, very quickly. It's already happening in a lot of cases. Of course, you can control and let people in to your apartment or door or whatever it is. Of course, you can turn the thermostat off remotely wherever you're at. Like, yeah, it's 2018. It's 2019. It's the Jetsons, right? But where we go from it is like, what can you do now that you have all of this? It's about experience, whether it's a resident experience or just the user experience of a maintenance person. So we want to tie all these things together. So when you think about residents, it's residential house cleaners, dog walkers, laundry cleaning, pickup, all these sorts of things that are now a great service to the resident. You know, we want to bring residential car sharing into an apartment building. Building parking in urban environments is really, really expensive for a developer. In a lot of cases, you're required to build a parking space and a half or two parking spaces per bed. How do we lower that? Which should make more projects feasible. But ultimately, it gives a different lifestyle mobility to the resident where they don't even have to own a vehicle, which is something I sold my vehicle 3 years ago kind of as an experiment living downtown, and I've never gone back. Uber, Lyft everywhere, walk a lot more. But it's totally changed my life, and I really think that we're going towards a mobility as a service or a living as a service type lifestyle. Time arbitrage is the future.
Because if you go to a city like New York, well, of course everyone's walking everywhere, because why would you want a car? That'd be absolutely a nightmare. You could have that car in Kansas City. You need that car.
319 square miles. We're pretty spread out.
We're very spread out. However, let's just say that my wife and I move from the suburbs to the city, which will happen after our kids are out of school. We're not too far from that. And now, okay, maybe I need one car because I've got to be able to get to the stadium, but we certainly don't need two cars. And now that's going to fall under everything you're talking about, right, in terms of space and money and the whole works.
It ultimately makes people more efficient. So there's a lot of macro trends happening today, right? Technology and all these things, but people are moving to cities faster than we've ever moved to cities ever in the history of humanity.
And is that everywhere?
It's literally everywhere. I think the number is something like 3 million people a day or a year. I can't remember exact, but it's insane. I think it's 3 million yearly are moving to cities a day, worldly, globally. I mean, it's a massive macro trend that's happening. And, when you then look at cities and how they become more efficient, like every time a city doubles in size, all of the services and everything that goes into actually running that city should actually become at least 15% more efficient. So density is key and all of these other things. Some of our past background in turning Kansas City into one of the world's largest smart cities with Cisco and Sprint and some of the others, one of the things we recognize is people spend more than 90%, 95% of their time in a city indoors. And a lot of that time, especially, is in a mixed-use building, their office, but especially in an apartment building. So if you start to look at like just nodes on a network, buildings are really just a node on the network in a city. They're microcosms of what that general whole city is. And so we make them more efficient, better. We can make a city smart from the inside out.
Let's go back to your background, because you don't just suddenly start creating smart cities without having some type of technology type of background. So when I asked you before we started about kind of when you got into this, I wasn't surprised to hear your answer. It didn't start like at 22 years old.
It did not. So I'll be 34 this summer. I've entrepreneur all my life. My parents are entrepreneurs. I was very...
What did your parents do, or what do they do?
They run a small business, margarita machines, frozen margarita machines. So rentals, and they're all over the city. So they've done that for 20, 30, oh gosh, almost 30 years now.
So at what point would you guess... Well, I'll let you tell about when you kind of really started on computers, but then I'm curious when you feel like you became, if not became an entrepreneur, had that entrepreneurial bug.
So lucky enough, parents, they were figuring out computers early on because they were trying to figure out how they ran their own business. This is early 90s. And I was lucky enough to have them. They got me on the internet in 92. I was like 8 years old, right? But for the longest time, and especially through the 90s, it was like, what is that weird kid doing on the computer all the time and whatever. I was just learning how it worked. I taught myself how to build websites, which then really kind of learned how to code a little bit, did small little apps.
But you're talking about learning how to build websites and coding at...
Late 90s, yeah. Teenager, I was the only kid in like Prairie Village that anybody knew how to build a website.
So. Because nowadays, which is really awesome, by the way, for the future, you look at the curriculum in schools across the board, they're teaching early coding to like first and second graders.
Oh, absolutely.
You didn't have that benefit.
No. I mean, I didn't even have it barely in high school. I went to Shine Mission East, and the best we had was like DECA, which was like kind of an after-school business program, and they just entered this like e-commerce section. So I ended up creating a company, flying air quotes, in high school called SM East Bay, and it was because we were the only ones that knew anything about computers. So we created this localized eBay, like 2000, I think it was, just for the Shawnee Missionese community. And we ended up selling like 7 or 8 things on it, which was like a huge, crazy success. Sure. And all that. But, you know, that, like, I grew up just around computers, around technology, learning the internet and learning kind of what the internet opened up, which was possibilities for anybody to create their own way, right? Like, growing up, at least for me, was always, or I think probably a lot of millennials, is like, oh, you go to school, you go to get into college, you go to college so you can get a good job. And, you know, that's not always the case. The world has changed very significantly. And we're, I think, really, we're at the cusp of a massive change with more automation. And what do you do? Like, how do you get people, how do you support people when that happens and their job just doesn't exist anymore and it literally happened overnight and we're not teaching people the same way?
So what are the negatives of this? Because I think that's one thing that would scare people. I mean, I've always been of the belief that you need to roll with the times. You need to, people struggle with change, but eventually it happens and they get used to it. In general, I think people are always a little scared of change. But yet so much automation, and we're giving up so much to make things more efficient, to make things better. Are there dangers? I mean, I'm thinking like in terms of the fact that, look at what cell phones, I'm guilty as anyone. Look at the way cell phones have diverted our attention. We don't think as much about stuff.
Yeah, no, I think there are a lot of really big questions we have to be asking. And I think, you know, keep in mind, it's also happening really fast and it hasn't been happening for a long time. These phones that we can now keep in our pockets that have more computing power than put a man on the moon, like, they've only been in our pocket really for 10 years, but for many of us, only like 5 or 6. So we don't have a huge sample size of like, what really does it affect? How is it affecting us? How is it affecting our kids? All these different things. And I think that we need to be asking these questions and be talking about it, because there are so many things that privacy and data security and all these things that is just changing the nature. But just a funny thing is, like, you know, I've got a goddaughter, she's 5 years old. I gave them a Alexa device for Christmas, and watching her interact with it is really kind of interesting, because she's learned that to speak with her, you just be very direct, mm-hmm. and whatever. But she ends up kind of sounding really mean or sassy or whatever, where like, Alexa, do this. And it's like, we all kind of realize, well, now we've got our kids are demanding and they don't have any manners, because, and it makes sense, talking to a computer needed to be very binary. So these unintended consequences of how things work today then create a model for the future that maybe we don't like. Maybe it creates a lot of really mean people.
It's a crazy world. I mean, I could say right now, hey, Alexa, what's the weather going to be tomorrow? And I just did that because somebody that's listening right now's Alexa just went on.
Uh-huh.
And I've had that happen to me, so I just wanted to mess with people on that.
Absolutely.
It's a crazy world, no doubt about it. So this company is, what, about 2 years old now?
We're about 2 years old.
Tell me about the growth of where you were when you started to just today in about 2 years.
Yeah, so, you know, we got started really with a bunch of real estate and developers here locally, one Sunflower Development, as well as J.E. Dunn Construction, kind of just looking to, what does it look like? What does the future of smart buildings look like? Because everybody wants to get out of the amenities arms race. You know, on the Dunn side of things, like, building buildings is really expensive. How do you make sure that building stays efficient and you're, as a construction company, able to provide value in the long term for your buildings that you're building? And I think looking at all of the, as costs come down, that's really where we started looking at it. So we've been building for about 2 years. In about 400 units right now today, sitting here in February, but have a very aggressive deployment plan. We'll be about 4,000 units by the end of May. And if
that's
things,
just in 3 months here.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of these are because buildings are finally getting built. You know, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff has been very new. We just come out with a new retrofit program too. So we're starting to do a lot of retrofitting, but a lot of the stuff we've been working on for the last 2 years, they've been getting built. And so a lot of them are starting to come online, which is really exciting. We're starting to roll those out. And then, you know, we have a lot of big partnerships that we can't really talk about yet, but some big OEMs and some of the larger groups you've heard of that are doing some cool stuff in the smart home space are starting to work with and create just really compelling, like, Jetson-like experiences, which is really cool. For us, again, it's not about just this cool turning off your lock or locking your lock and unlocking it. It's these crazy, just Jetson-like experiences.
We'll get right back with Blake in just a moment, but when I met Blake the other day, I also saw at the same event Michael Wilson, the CEO and founder of Nile Watch. And Nile recently moved from the Plaza in Kansas City to Leawood. They're in Park Place, right by the Parisi Coffee, if you've been over that way. So I highly encourage you to get over, check that out, or just go online to nileluxury.com, and they have some of the best, most beautiful timepieces that you can find anywhere in the world. In 2017, Nile was named the number one watchmaker in America by The Good Trade. So take a look, nileluxury.com. Nile, all in. And now back to the interview with Blake Miller. Kansas City now is just so far ahead. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happening with the growth, the technology, young people wanting to be here instead of going somewhere else and stay and having jobs. And I know you've had a big impact on Kansas City, smart city. How have you been able to make those strides?
I think one of the number one things, especially just being here in Kansas City, is just executing on things. Like, coming up with an idea is one thing, but then executing on it and actually accomplishing it just inspires people for so many other things, right? I will also say, though, that everything that's happening in Kansas City is a lot of serendipity. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of people doing a lot of really awesome things. But, like, and it's not just because we're sitting here talking, I really don't think it happens without the Royals winning World Series and some of those other things that just serendipitously happened.
I get that, yeah.
With as Kansas City was on the rise, right? Like, all these things start to compound and all of a sudden people are talking about it.
People are happy, people are hungry, people want to help each other.
Yeah, and people from the outside, I think they see it, right? They hear about, oh my gosh, Kansas City is the world's largest smart city. Kansas City just got Google Fiber. Kansas City's doing this. There's this entrepreneurial whatever. And then all of a sudden the Royals are doing awesome and it's on the national scene at the right time when all these things are happening. And then just it's just infectious, I think, is the word of people being around Kansas City during that time. And so the outside looking in is like, man, there's something happening there. And so, you know, I've said to a lot of people, I never get tired of having a friend in from out of town that's never been here or hasn't been here for a while. And they get to downtown, they get around, they're like, man, I had no idea. I literally just got goosebumps getting it, but it's like every time. And that, like, being a homeboy, you know, Kansas City hometown guy, born and raised here, like, I love that. I think it's exciting. There's never been a better time to be at Kansas City, I don't think.
A few baseball themed questions I like to ask on this podcast. Biggest home run that you have hit professionally?
You know, it has to be Kansas City being one of the world's largest smart cities. It's one of those things, like, I can't believe, we even, like, came up with this crazy idea and then had, you know, the ability to even pitch it to the mayor. But the fact that he was like, we should do that. And not only that, it's going to change the trajectory of this city. And doing it kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, this is never going to happen. There's no way. There's too many politics. There's too many things that could happen. And then just having somebody like that who has the vision, too, just to see it and trust it and like, well, you guys will do this.
Biggest swing and miss you've had?
Ooh, those are a lot.
I always say they make us better.
Yeah.
If they don't kill us.
I would say, so I was involved with a barbecue sauce that won the American Royal 2 years in a row called the Secret Sauce. Awesome sauce. It was so good. But literally grew ourselves out of business. Try to grow too fast and it'll kill you.
And then I like to talk a lot about small ball. We know with the Royals that they weren't the home run hitters, but they did all the little things right. What's a little thing along the way for you that made a big impact?
I think the little thing is just getting involved. You know, I think for me, like, I moved downtown in 2008 and not a lot of people living downtown, but obviously having a business down there and trying to, like, kind of spur this creativity and all these things. But I got involved very heavily with, like, the downtown council and tactical urbanism and all these things I never would have thought of because I'm kind of cynical when it comes to, like, government and some of those things. But getting involved gave me a totally different perspective. And, you know, maybe it's not a little thing, but I think that it's little. It's, you know, I think a lot of people don't take the time to just try to do it, mainly because they don't understand what they actually will get out of it for themselves.
All right, four final quick questions that I like to wrap up with. We'll call it rounding the bases, heading to first. You were telling me that you used to flip websites, which I'd never heard. I mean, it makes sense, right? But in terms of flipping houses, it would be like that. How did you get into that world?
So it was early 2000s, going off to college, and I was trying to teach myself something, how to build a website, and stumbled upon this website that was like more of an auction marketplace, and saw people that were literally just selling a website that I was like, oh, I can build that. I know how to do that. And, you know, they said it had $100 a month in advertising revenue. Like, okay, well, they bought it for like $1,000, 10 times that revenue, took it, drove more traffic to it, got it to making about $1,000 a month, and then would sell it for $10,000. And I just would do that over and over and over and over.
That's big business.
It was, for me,
20 years old or whatever.
Yeah,
you were.
18, 19, 20 years old. And it was just learning. I had no idea what I was doing, but, you know, I would buy it was like a WWF wrestling magazine, online magazine. And I just loved watching WWF. So I was like, I know about this, and had no idea about it.
But kids nowadays are like, no, isn't it WWE?
Yeah.
But I remember the WWF days. So that'll lead me to my second question as we head to second. If you were a big wrestling guy, I have my favorite clip, my favorite interview of all time that I did. And I obviously have been able to interview great athletes. But Rowdy Roddy Piper shows up one day at Wrigley Field. Live television with Rowdy Roddy Piper. He's in the kilt and everything. The most fun, crazy, and sweetest guy in the world. Who's your favorite wrestler growing up?
You know, if you have to just go with a tip of the tongue, Ultimate Warrior. Tip of the tongue, that was the first thing up. But it's like, you know, you grew up in the era with like some of these greats.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I'm sure people think the same thing about this time. I don't watch that much at all. But like, you know, you just think back in the day and it's like I could name off probably 20 guys that are just – that were the crew, right? You know, everything from Sergeant Slaughter to...
I have his autograph somewhere.
No kidding?
I met him at the airport once. I was like 11 years old.
Yeah, I love that.
But he was walking through the airport in army fatigues.
That's awesome.
And I had like, it's somewhere in a box, but I have like this piece of paper that's just ripped, that has just enough space on it. I probably asked my mom, do you have any paper and a pen? And it was just a little sliver of a paper that says Sergeant Slaughter.
That's so awesome.
You know, just the weird things. So those were my two wrestlers, Sergeant Slaughter and Rowdy Roddy Piper. All right, third base, what do? When you can get away from all the technology, do you need to get away from the technology? How do you unwind?
So that's the answer is yes, need to get away from technology. Like right now I run pretty hard, don't have the chance to have a lot of hobbies and everything, but the one hobby I do have, and I have been doing it since 2009, is competitive barbecue.
That's cool.
Yeah, never in a million years would have thought I would be giving up 15 weekends a year to go to, like, you know, BFE towns all over, you know, 2 hours around Kansas City to go cook barbecue for a weekend. It's literally the coolest thing I do. It's a bunch of fraternity brothers. We started it, and now it's we go camp out for the weekend, basically. And
what's your favorite thing you make?
Our brisket is pretty awesome. We've won the Lenexa barbecue in brisket a couple years back. Which was like a state championship. So it was pretty awesome to be like, yeah, I don't know if you know this, but we're the Kansas State champion in brisket. It's just a weird thing, but
but it has to mean something.
Oh, it means something.
Sounds
to us.
Good.
It sounds awesome.
I mean, I want to have some of it actually now, but
we'll have to have you out.
Well, I'll work on that. Final question, the walk-off as we round the bases. You're a forward-thinking, progressive guy.
Try to live in the future.
Yes. So where would... Let's say that 20 years from now, I want to go and get a place in the city. Mm-hmm. It'll be sooner than that. It'll be like 8 years. But 20 years from now, I say, I'm getting out of the suburbs and I'm going to the city. What will that look like?
Well, you're not going to have a vehicle. That's for one. So you will probably have, you know, autonomous trucks and vehicles come and move you. Mm. You will just kind of show up at your apartment that is very like the Jetsons. And, you know, you hear everything as a service these days.
There won't be flying cars yet.
I do not think that flying cars are where it's going to happen. I think that, I mean, when something goes wrong, they fall. You know, that's...
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of problems. Like, you can't solve gravity. So I just think those are other interesting issues. But I think that... you know, there will be hyperloops, and I think that there will be, you know, the ability to kind of, I think space is going to change the concept of space. You'll live more densely. And, but I think truly it will be all around living as a service. It's going to be about time arbitrage. What's your time worth? What do you make versus like, you know, do you want to just sit on your couch on Saturday, or do you need to do XYZ chores or just outsource it?
Will we have cell phones?
Oh, yeah. I think we will. I think we will.
They won't look like this, though. Right? Like the smartphone right now will be like the flip phone.
Right. I don't, you know, who knows? Who knows? You know, I think it's funny. You look back on like a movie like Zoolander or something like that, where like he has like the super tiny, tiny phone and picks it up. Like I think everybody thought the phones were going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And all of a sudden we're like carrying around that, you know, phablets, you know, in your pocket. Like everybody, they got bigger. So I don't know. I think.
This is a good podcast because we talked Jetsons, wrestling, and Zoolander.
Yeah.
Which you really can't go. And barbecue.
And barbecue.
You can't really go wrong with any of those.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing Ben Stiller right now hovering over the little dollhouse.
There it is.
For ants.
Oh, it's in the computer.
Blake, thanks so much for doing this.
This was awesome.
Congrats. Continued success. And it's so cool to sort of get that glimpse of the future and see where it's going.
I just think it's awesome that it's happening here in Kansas City. It can happen anywhere.
Totally agree. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about Homebase or Blake, you can check him out on social media at imbmills or his website, blakemiller.com. And also, would greatly appreciate it if you would go to my website, joelgoldbergmedia.com, or to iTunes, review and rate the podcast. That would really be huge. And hope to see you back here next time on Rounding the Bases with Joel Goldberg. Thanks, everyone.